Hello and welcome to the Collapse Podcast. I'm Joel.
And I'm Matt.
And today, we are not covering a company. Instead, we are going to talk about something that is often linked to so many different companies collapsing, if we can get our own little marketing with our own podcast there. So we've decided there are going to be three different types of episodes in this podcast. There's going to be the two types you've already seen. One is the longer narratives that you saw with Pan Am and Polaroid. And the second type is a mini episode like Instant Pot, where we just kind of talk about a specific event with a company or something that's happened more recently. It may not be necessarily as much information. And the third type is going to be a supplemental episode, which is going to cover a topic either linked to a specific episode. For example, Lehman Brothers is definitely on our radar, and so there might be a supplemental episode before they come out to help perhaps understand some topics that would pertain to that company's downfall that are important to understand that may not necessarily fit into the narrative. Today, we are going to talk about organizational culture, which sounds boring. But every person, every employee cares about culture. So let me ask you, Matt, in your own words, and it doesn't have to be what you think now, but maybe before your master's, what would you say culture is?
I would say culture is the both spoken and unspoken rules and behaviors that people abide by, whether that's in an organization or in society, but a tone of some kind that is inherited and followed.
That's very good. I think when I kind of talked to some people and kind of did an informal poll, what I got is I just know if I don't like a place. Right. Or It's just a feeling I have. It is very, and you'll hear a lot of leaders, and I've definitely heard this, I'm sure you have, talk about culture. And as they're talking, it's almost like, do you even know what that is? But it's just something that's this very vague term that you can almost turn into anything. Here, and there are multiple definitions out there. Matt, that was a very good one. And I found one that I think was very succinct and really honed in on what organizational culture really is, to the point that you can present this, and I have presented it, at the executive level. So what is organizational culture? It's made up of three parts, and you hit on two of them, which are shared knowledge, like you talked about, and unwritten rules. The third part of organizational culture is physical. And we're going to go into all of these. What is that? And things that fall into this category are the pay and benefits that a company offers, the looks of the facility, parking, the food that they offer, if it's a company that offers food, and basically everything that you can actually see. I mean, as a staff member, you go to work, you love your work environment, but you have to go three floors up for the bathroom because your bathroom stall never gets fixed. Yeah.
Right.
Or, you have really terrible health insurance, or you don't get paid well, or maybe you get paid great. But all of these things are a reflection of the physical manifestation of culture for an organization. So another example would be, Matt, your computer, always has problems, but they never get fixed, right? So it hinders your ability to work, but it's a reflect how timely some things get done is a reflection of the organization's ability to function, and it's a reflection that this is the physical manifestation of culture.
That makes sense, because I've seen that in places before where people will say they're very concerned with upgrading, I'm trying to keep it nondescript, but they're very concerned with keeping upgrading the software, but the actual hardware that I'm working on is from like 1999 and they haven't changed it, and like, it doesn't matter how good the software is. I can't function on this machine anymore and I need someone to pay for it. Right. So, that's part of that physical culture is, if employees are voicing that concern, about those kinds of physical assets, and not there's not seeing any change that's, you know, going to cause some discontent.
Yeah, which goes into right into the second part, which is the shared knowledge, which also policies and procedures and the efficiency of the company, kind of the management philosophy, kind of all fall into this. Because let's say, like you said, you're working with this really old technology, okay? That's the physical part. But then you have a problem with it, right? So you report it to somebody. In this entire reporting process, that is the workflows and kind of the shared knowledge portion of organizational culture. Because you could fill in a ticket and then nothing happens. A year rolls by, nothing happens. 2 years roll by. It just never gets done, right? That is how efficient that the organization is at responding to problems brought up by staff is another aspect of organizational culture, and it's a reflection of the efficiency of that organization. If they are unwilling to – I used your technology example, but in general, you know, a company needs to be flexible and needs to be able to change because things change over time, and they have to be able to change their processes to adapt. If they are unwilling to do that, it just bogs everything down. Any thoughts on that, Matt, before I move on?
So I would say for the policies and procedures, this is a big one for people because when you feel like you can't get things done, right, or your work is inhibited by lots of red tape or, you know, bureaucracy, if you will, then you just need, that's your experience at work, right? That's your everyday living experience, is dealing with those policies and those procedures. And then you start to just expect that everything's going to take extra time, right? Everything is going to require a Herculean effort to be done. Or if it's regulatory, right, you might expect like this might come back on us because we're not organized, you know, any of those kinds of things. So, yeah, I think policies and procedures is a big one, and is one that's actually, believe it or not, often overlooked because it's kind of considered boring by a lot of people, right? So, you know, nobody really wants to think about it or deal with it. But in those details is where the real problems sort of hide. Mm-hmm. And some of it's just negligence. It's not really like anybody intended to do something nefarious with the policies and procedures, although that happens. But many times it's just it gets overlooked and people don't pay attention.
Mm-hmm. And that also segues into the unwritten rules, because in between, which is the third part of organizational culture, because in between all the policies and procedures, there's always typically a lot of gray and all of these unwritten rules, which we'll talk about here a little bit, but every single department within every company is going to have all of these rules that are not written down, and you just don't know till you get there. For example, you know, you never give Susan this type of work because she doesn't do it well. Mm-hmm. You know, like, mm-hmm. Don't give Matt projects that have to do with, you know, statistical analysis because it just doesn't work. It takes forever. Or so, you know, like all these things.
You won't get back what you want. Yeah.
Yeah. Or, oh, you know. Joel always goes and plays golf on Wednesdays afternoons, so just don't, you know. I mean, he's not actually out of the office, but he's out of the office.
Yeah.
You know, kind of thing.
He's online, but don't message him.
Yeah, yeah. He's doing a work meeting. So, you know, just all of these rules are that just you will never find, but they definitely mm-hmm. make up the feeling and the culture of a department. Absolutely, but even a organization, because people then start ascribing these things to an organization that we just kind of talked about, which was, why do you even put in a ticket? You know, they're never going to get it fixed.
Yep.
You know, well, you know, of course, look, the policy and procedures right here. It says that, you know, they have to do it in a timely manner. Yeah, but that never happens. So we know it's never going to happen. Mm-hmm. Right. So these things kind of build up.
Yeah.
Over time.
Yeah. I mean, especially the ones you said about how you work with people, that can really, especially for new people, if you're trying to retain talent and you have these unwritten rules that sometimes some of them feel slightly unethical, like, well, you know, they say to put this number down, but then you really just all you have to do is put this one down instead. Like, what, you know, maybe that's billing or whatever it happens to be. You know, if you're a new joiner, you're thinking about, is this really the type of behavior that I want to be a part of? Is this how the company runs itself in the background? Mm. You know, are these the type of people that I want to be surrounded by to grow my career? And, you know, those kinds of things really do weigh on people.
Yeah. And on the departmental level or just the individual level with your boss, you see this all the time. He's like, oh, I'm going to go to my boss for this. And somebody's like, you don't want to go to him for that. You know,
yeah.
That's going to make you look weak. They don't like weak people, you know? So it's like, okay. Yeah. So, yeah. So all of these things, when you take all three, they equal the organizational culture of a company. So now that we at least roughly understand what the makeup is, what's a healthy culture? We just kind of talked about what it is, but not what a healthy one is. So here, I like nice succinct things, so I will try to make this succinct. A healthy culture is a culture that is open to change. It's one that supports the well-being of its employees, and it's one where the individuals within an organization exemplify the values of that company. I think when you take those three, I guess we're doing threes here, that is a rough definition of what a healthy culture is. So why is it that creating a healthy culture is so difficult at a large organization? Let's go back to a small organization. Let's say it's one store, Matt's Paper.
My dream job.
Running a paper store. What kind of paper do you want to sell?
I love 65 weight cardstock.
I'm impressed that you knew that.
There might be some truth to all this, you know.
Yeah. I guess so. Okay, so you have a small company. You're the head of it. You're there every day. You have 15 employees. Essentially, you have, because you interact with everybody, you can essentially dictate the culture of that organization, mm-hmm. right? You set the rules. You create the policies and procedures of the owner. You set the pace. You determine the pay for the employees. You determine pretty much everything. So you, as an individual, can have this personality, if you want to call it that, that is able to encompass the entire organization. It's small. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't want to get too complicated, but the reverse can also be true because, you know, there's the whole dynamic of power and influence. You have really toxic people that aren't in positions of power, but they have a lot of influence and they can dictate the culture. I don't want to go down that rabbit hole, so we're just going to keep this nice and simple. Okay. Now let's say you, Matt's Paper Company, Inc., you're now incorporated and you have hundreds of franchises across the United States. You are definitely not visiting all these places. It's very hard when you have, you know, 20,000, 50,000, 100,000 employees to have a personality that's able to project itself over an entire organization, mm-hmm. right? So one of the barriers to a healthy culture is typically in large organizations, you'll have fractured cultures because department culture will typically be determined by the leaders in that area, right? So the managers, the directors, the VPs in a certain area, maybe even an entire service line. So keeping in paper, you have a whole department dedicated to research of new 65.
Maybe
you want to go up to 66 found cardstock there. Niche market. So you have a research department, and that is a very different feel and culture than the retail side, right? So this is why you can have people that work at Matt's Paper Company. Some people love it and say it's the best job they ever had, and some people hate it mm-hmm. because they're in different sections.
This is so true, because I've seen this before many times where people will say, yeah, you know, the people in this department, they're very, very picky about what kinds of software they get or what kinds of, you know, training they get. And then, you know, there's another department, they're very easygoing. Everybody loves working over there. And when you're in that bubble, life is good. And you can't, you have kind of blinders on sometimes to that outside, those outside practices. So, you know, yeah, as you said, these atomized cultures develop in different departments, and they tend to sometimes stay siloed like that. But as I'm sure you're probably going to talk about, sometimes that culture spreads mm-hmm. between departments. It could be a good culture, it could be a bad culture, and you've, you know, it's no longer siloed anymore. It's the whole tenor of the company.
Absolutely. We're still going to talk about barriers to healthy culture first. We'll get there. Mm-hmm. Another one is when you are at any given level at an organization, Matt's paper company, right? If you're a frontline staff or a manager or director or a VP or an executive, you're all at different levels of an organization and you interact with different people. And even those have their own cultures within them. So if you are, like yourself, you're an owner, an executive at this company, one of the barriers to providing a healthy culture is that you're in a healthy culture. The executives have a great culture. I mean, my goodness, look, you're playing golf on Wednesdays and, you know, dinner meetings on Thursdays, and you're loving your life. And the work culture is excellent. But that is only at your level. And that may not be the case at every single level. And so you have the, like you just kind of mentioned, like they're blinded because they're in a healthy culture. They're assuming that that's the mm-hmm. case at every level.
Yep.
Another barrier is just they don't really know what healthy culture is. That, and this is tricky, because if you get hired in, let's say you're a fresh new leader and you get hired into this company and they're willing to train you, and it's a toxic environment, you don't necessarily know that because, you know, you're coming in to learn. They're going to train you probably in a poor way, right? And so they just don't understand what healthy culture is. This is just the way it's always mm-hmm. been here. Another barrier to healthy culture is having and producing and taking the effort to create a healthy culture is expensive, or at least it takes a lot of work, I should say, even if the cost is not monetary, it will certainly be time consuming. Mm-hmm. And lastly is turnover, staff turnover. Not saying that it's necessarily high, just that if you have a healthy culture, let's just focus on one department, and the VP leaves and somebody else comes in, they could have an entirely different way of looking at things.
Mm-hmm. That's true. And then there's also the fact that, let's say you've got a relatively toxic culture, but you have some folks who are in there and they want to make changes, and they try to make those good changes. Those people will come in from time to time, but if they face too much resistance, they leave, and slowly your company filters for just the people that will adhere to that current environment. And so that staff turnover contributes to a more solidified culture, but it could be good, could be bad. I've heard companies say before, if you don't jive with us, you'll be gone in 3 months. And I'm like, okay, well, I don't know what your culture is like. So you're really, you're really putting me on the spot to decide whether or not, you know, that your culture is, I guess, good or bad from the outside. You can't tell stuff like that.
It's very hard. You can't tell. You can't even tell an interview. In fact, you can't even tell if the person you're bringing in is necessarily good or bad in an interview. It's very hard.
To me, there's a couple key words that I've heard before, like, we're a family. That one was always a little bit of a warning sign to me.
Yeah, you know, yes, it's a warning sign. But I also know people use that phrase too. They see it as a very positive thing.
I should clarify. I mean, it's a warning sign in conjunction with other phrases such as, we like to work hard and play hard. And if that's not for you, that's okay. I've heard that one before in conjunction with the we're a family. And I'm like, this doesn't sound very good.
I'll just take the play hard part. You guys can do the work.
It's kind of that, it feels a little bit like that Mean Girls sort of feeling where it's like, you know, it's okay if you don't jive with us. Maybe we're just not for you. You know what I mean? It's like a sort of slightly disdainful undertone.
Are you in or out?
I'm out. Club. See ya.
Yeah. So we kind of talked about the barriers, what organizational culture is. How do you have a healthy culture? It's not an easy answer. Well, actually, it is a simple answer. It's kind of simple to understand, difficult to implement, right? So one, it starts at the top. If you want to have healthy organizational culture throughout an entire organization, it has to start at the top. Yeah, you can have a great manager, you can have a great director, but that's just at the departmental level or divisional level or however the organization decides to break up their company. But to have it successfully pushed throughout the entire organization, you need to have the entire executive team on board and then pushing this culture down, which we're going to talk about these different steps, through the entire organization at every level. And that is hard, very hard, not necessarily because the executives that are there may disagree. Actually, I guarantee that if you talk to any executive, they'll say, well, of course we want a healthy culture.
Who would say no?
Like, that's not a – yeah, nobody would say no to that. It's just very difficult to do. So how you to do it, right? So we talked about the full commitment from the leadership team. You have to create buy-in with the staff, especially when there is mistrust with management, right? And management has to be consistent, right? If you – and this has happened. I have seen this. If the executives get a 40% pay raise – but they're telling their staff that their departments can't afford raises this year, that is creating mistrust. Now, I'm going to play the other side of this. They could be getting a 40% pay raise, not in their salary, just because not necessarily just because of their salary, but because their stock, you know, they got their stocks. Can't think of
stock options.
I keep saying I want to say maturity, but mm-hmm. I keep wanting to say like maturity, but that's bonds. their stock options, you know, hit or they met their target goals, right? So it could be it looks like a pay raise. It's just that they reached it, but that's not how it looks to staff. And trying to explain that doesn't really work when you explain why you just got a few million dollar increase that year. So, you know, being consistent, being open and honest with the staff. Following up when staff have a concern or a problem, that is followed up on and answered. That's key. Things fester. If you go, like with your computer, you go and you report a problem and nothing happens, maybe if it's not that instant, it's just slowly building up in your mind, like they're just not going to do anything. Like, they don't really care. And it's these small, meaningful gestures and treating people like they are people, right? I love that quote, which says, you know, when I talk to a manager, I feel like they're important. And when I talk to a leader, I feel important. Mm-hmm. Right? So that sounds nice. That's a nice little quote. But man, that's really hard. I can give you an example of something that made me one of the companies I worked for. We had our second child and unbeknownst to me, I got this care package in the mail of baby clothes and a toy for my daughter. And, you know, I did not know about it. And it was a nice surprise, a nice little way that the company could let me know that, you know, they appreciated me.
Yeah. Those little things add up, and the good and the bad, you know, and they will sort of create a sum total of how someone feels about the company over time. People's motivations are complex, right? So maybe you're perfect in your culture in one area, but you're lacking in another, and you just can't figure out you know, maybe for instance, you're like, we do everything right when it comes to our manufacturing processes and procedures, but people are still unhappy. And the root cause is maybe there's an HR problem. There's an HR culture problem, right? So this, you know, it is definitely multifaceted. But I think, as you said, Joel, the consistency is a big one. I think processes, for example, I talked on that before. If you want to make a culture change, for example, of let's use the manufacturing as an example, we have no recalls on our products. And I want there to be a culture of everybody cares about, you know, a safe product going out the door. Well, you can't just walk around to your employees and be like, today you're going to start feeling like I care about what goes out the door. You know, let's start feeling that way together, right? You know, you can have one of those powwow sessions if you want, but honestly, it's probably not going to last very long. The way you change that is you start shifting, you start tracking down the procedures where things fall apart, where, you know, and you start establishing, let's say it's some kind of safety checklist. And you're like, we do this every time. This is required. We do it every time. And, you know, you start reinforcing that behavior. And those kinds of things, they take time. People are resistant to them because it's change. But they slowly begin to conform to that till eventually you start having employees telling others, hey, you can't just ship that out. You haven't completed the, you know, safety impact assessment or whatever you want to call it, right? So that consistency is important. And then I think, as you also said, following through from leadership is really key. You know, if they say they're going to do something, they need to follow up, because trust is very hard to build, but it's very easy to lose. You know, and I think that's a really big one, is sometimes leaders are like, how can I get everybody bought into what I'm saying? And it's like, well, how often, and I don't mean this to sound too negative, but like, how often have they been lied to in the past? You know,
yeah.
Basically, how often has leadership said we're going to do this thing and then never followed through? Because that's why they're not following you right now, you know?
To try to create the nice short bullet points to create a healthy culture in 30 seconds, right? Create buy-in, right? Do these things with your staff. Create healthy relationships. The number one reason people leave a job is because they don't like their boss or culture. Number two is pay. That's important too, but it's not the number one reason. Work on creating relationships with your staff. People want to work at places that they want to be at, right? When they have relationships, they want to be there, right? Creating that buy-in, like you said, always following up. Another is breaking bad management habits. Not that they're intentional, but still breaking them. For example, one that is usually a negative association is bringing someone into the office. You know, great. And then you hear, can you close that door behind you? You know, like, okay. You know, so you should, you know, being called into an office should not be associated with negativity necessarily. You know, you should bring people into the office just as much to tell them what a great job they're doing, or you notice something specific as they are in for negative reasons, right? So kind of breaking some of those things. Mm-hmm. And just treating people as people and being open and honest. That'll get you pretty far. And being flexible, being willing to change, being able to admit when you're wrong. These are all components of a healthy culture.
In my experience too, one of the biggest things that has helped to start or kickstart culture change is just listening to people. Sometimes people...
Yeah. What? You said something?
No, sometimes people want to be able to say or vent something that's been on their mind for a while, and then you realize, oh, that's a process or a problem that we could easily fix, but no one has listened to this person. And now's our chance to do that, you know? And sometimes that's all that's needed, is to just start listening to people.
Mm-hmm. Now, we're going to talk here a little bit. We're going to give some examples, right? And Matt and I were talking off the air here. It is much easier to find bad examples because they tend to make the news, right? And they go into a lot of detail. It's a little bit harder to find healthy culture. Plus, is a really healthy. I have worked or seen companies that say they have great culture, and then you see things online, right, or people reviews, and they're like, yeah, that's not true. They do this and that. And so, you know, it's kind of hard to say, but we can give some examples of places that overall tend to have good culture, right? For example, Ben and Jerry's was known to have a pretty good culture. Actually, one of the things that they really they did in the beginning of their organization was they capped executive pay to like 4 times the lowest paid member of the in the company, which is a great thought, and a lot of people support that. But they had trouble finding executives down the road, which I know it's funny, but it's they ended up lifting that. But it was something they really cared about. They really wanted people to be treated equally, or at least as equally as possible. Patagonia is another one. One of the things that they're very successful at is staying true to their mission of reducing waste. That's something that they care about a lot, and I've heard some good things about that company. I know I'm the example I'm going to use for negative is going to be a little more in depth, but we have a lot more information about that as well. You have any examples, Matt?
I think one that comes to mind, no company is perfect, but I don't know if you've ever heard of Lush, actually. They're like a body soap and cosmetics kind of thing. And they seem to, at least for me from the outset, to be very true to their mission and values as well. It seems like a lot of the people who work there are really bought into the mission of the company, and the company does its best to, and you know, what part of their mission is, again, sustainability, like you know, Patagonia, where you bring in like your containers and they will clean them and reuse them for other customers and things like that, right? So of course, I'm sure if we looked it up online, there will always be something, right? But an organization is just a group of people, and a group of people together always have some kind of flaw. But I think overall, they seem like a company that is trying to do their best there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Another way to assess how well a company is doing, and it's a kind of like a secondary assessment, but you can look at the turnover rate for an organization, and that can be a good indicator of its culture. Not always, but sometimes. I am one company that has a low turnover rate that comes to mind is Costco. It's a very low turnover rate. Some other companies that have a very low turnover rate are Honeywell.
That's interesting.
Yeah, that's what I thought too. This is based on a survey, by the way. Plus, I'm sure companies don't always like to release their turnover data. Delta Airlines.
Not Boeing.
Not Boeing. interesting. Microsoft, Intel, Best Buy are also kind of on the list too. Yeah. But I have a very specific example that we would like to talk about for a negative culture. Now, before we go into this company scandal, I had to remind myself that this is not a podcast about the scandal. I went way into the weeds with it. I'm going to keep it pretty surface level. However, what this company did do very successfully was push this culture onto the entire organization. So from that standpoint, extremely successful. And their methods were not the carrot approach that we kind of used here. More of the beating you with a carrot approach. So that would be Wells Fargo, right? They have had multiple problems. But the one we're highlighting here is in 2016, they had the Fives program. Right? So the executive team wanted every customer to have 5 accounts. I mean, it didn't really matter what they were, if they were bank accounts, checking, savings, mortgage, auto, you know, you name it. They wanted to push every customer to have 5 accounts. On the surface is a goal. There is nothing wrong with that, right? I mean, we would like to have a goal, like you said, you know, we want to have a manufacturing error rate of 0%. That's fine. There's nothing wrong with goals. It's the way that they went about it and the carrot and sticks that they used, mostly sticks. So this goal was pushed through all levels of organization. And then, you know, as to be expected, not everybody wanted to open up new accounts. Matt, let's say you're a they're termed a little bit different at every bank, but not a bank teller, but the what's the person that is helping you, giving you financial advice? You know, they have that like open desk.
Just account managers? I'm not sure.
We'll just use that term. So you're an account manager here at a Wells Fargo branch, and you know you talk to Steve, who's you know, came in for some advice or wanted help with an account. And you say, would you like to open up another account? He says, no. Okay. Well, then it's not so much a, hey, you should, you know, push for five. It's every customer is going to have five accounts. And even if you're a little resistant to that and you're like, yeah, well, I mean, they say that, but I'm not going to push an account on somebody if they don't really want it, right? You got scruples. But then you hear that Jim, who's a very high performer, just got fired because he wasn't meeting the goals. That's going to put a little fire underneath your thought process there. So all of a sudden, people magically started having five accounts. You know, staff would start opening up accounts in the names of these employees. And the names of customers. You know, you saw reports of customers who would see this new bank account that had $12 in it. And yeah, so employees just started opening up accounts, right? There was such a push from all levels of management to get this done. And not only would they fire you, they would blacklist you to not be able to work in the banking industry again. They were not messing around. And if you're looking at this from a purely from the perspective of being able to push out a culture, wow, are they successful? they just didn't have any scruples, and it was very toxic and very negative. And at the end, they got a big fine, but it was essentially a slap on the wrist.
It usually is.
For that, unfortunately. However, I think they are the only bank to have a cap on how many assets.
I saw that. That was very interesting.
I wanted to just toss out some other. These are kind of some odds and ends here at the end of the episode. There are some interest. Another company that is known to have decent culture is Build-A-Bear. You know, I think the founder created something called the Red Pencil Award. No. I don't know if you're familiar with that, Matt. It is an award given out, I don't remember how often, we'll just say quarterly, to the employee that made the largest mistake, which could be seen quite negatively. But in this light, it was not. It was essentially thanking them and saying, you know, we are able to learn from our mistakes. And because of your mistake, we are all able to learn from that as a group, as a unit, and we are better. We are a better organization as a result.
Seems interesting. I have mixed feelings about that one.
Yes, and I can see that. In order to do that, you need to have a pretty good culture in order for people to accept that. Otherwise, it's just seen as a
you know, Jim, you lost thing. Us $450 million in 3 days, but we can learn from this. You know, publicly just...
Yes, here's a red pencil. Why does it say the word fired on the side of it? You know? yeah.
I did want to mention a couple things on the Wells Fargo as I was reading the articles that you had sent over. I think one thing that jumped out to me that was, I mean, it's funny and not funny, but, you know, they said that in September of 2016, the bank admitted that employees had created 2.1 million fake accounts for existing customers between 2011 and 2015. Insane. But here's the funny part, right? March 2017, the bank reaches a $110 million settlement to compensate those $2.1 million accounts in August. Like, what is that? March, April, May, June, July. 5 months later, they're like, actually, it was 3.5 million accounts. And so then they had to go back to court again. And I'm just, I know that it's not how it went down, but
like, we just miscarried a zero there. The decimal point got a little moved. You know, it's a big number.
I know that this isn't how it went down, but for some reason, when I was reading this in my mind, I was picturing a judge like looking down, going, and for the fake accounts created for 2.1 million customers, and then a Wells Fargo representative on the other side of the bench is like, actually, it was 3.5 million. Like, thanks for your honesty.
Very sheepishly.
Thanks for your honesty. You know, because that's a value of Wells Fargo is honesty and ethics, right? Wasn't that one of them? Ethics was a value.
That's right. I like that. You know, I did say that to you, but I never did look more into it. That's the other thing. So how can you, you know, because Wells Fargo and every company, when you look at their mission and values, they're always great. Yeah. Nobody is saying that they're going to have poor values. But the company is breaking those. And so when that happens, how can you have trust in a company like that?
Well, and that's – sorry, go ahead.
I was just saying, you really can't.
Yeah, and I think it actually ties into the second article you sent, which was that in 2023, people started seeing fraudulent accounts again. And so their first assumption was, it's happening again. They're doing it again. But what it turned out is most of them were, you know, because we have to be we have to be a little bit charitable here to Wells Fargo, because these accounts were actually, you know, what are they called? Synthetic accounts that are fraudulent and used to move money around, right? So
it wasn't created by Wells Fargo. Wells Fargo's employees. Very
but hang on, Joel, because I'm going to take that credit right back because Wells Fargo told this one woman, if you want to get any information from Wells Fargo on these accounts, you should hire an attorney.
basically
what they're saying is like, fraud department, like non-existent. You should just hire an attorney. But then in the same breath, they're talking to the press and saying like, this happens all across every banking industry. It's something that we fight every day and we're working hard to, you know. It's the double speak doesn't do much for their reputation.
Yeah, and if you're a staff member, you're just rolling your eyes. Yeah. You know, there's no trust in that.
Exactly.
Yeah. And in order to have a healthy culture, the team has to want that, because there are companies out there that they're not particularly interested in that. That is not a goal of theirs. You know, they don't care about a healthy culture. They care about their EBITDA. Sorry. Yeah. You know how much we both quite dislike that marker. But you know what I mean? Their profits and what they have to talk to shareholders about. So that is our little wrap on organizational culture. The reason we are using this as a supplemental, and it's the first one we're doing, this will pretty much affect every single company that we're going to cover. And we have already covered it. I mean, Pan Am and Polaroid both had culture problems after, you know, down the line. And this is going to be a recurring theme. So I hope, and we hope, that this episode helps, that when you are listening to future episodes about companies, that you're kind of able to keep some of these thoughts in mind as you see a company start to crumble. And these are kind of some of the things that are at play in what they're failing at doing.
And, you know, this is just our summary of the whole discussion. There are books written about this stuff, right? So we've tried to kind of just give you the highlights here of the main drivers for for culture and why a company might fail because of it. But if you're interested to know more, there's definitely a plethora of information out there.
Yeah. And if you want that, please feel free to email us. We will happily give you the resources. All right. Well, the next episode will come out sooner from this one to the last one. But if you're binging this, it won't matter because it'll be there. All right. Till next time, everyone. Thanks. Thank you for listening. Bye.